Hello and welcome to the Stansberry Investor Hour. I'm your host, Dan Ferris. I'm also the editor of Extreme Value and the Ferris Report, both published by Stansberry Research.
And I'm Corey McLaughlin, editor of the Stansberry Daily Digest. Today, Dan interviews Keith Neumeyer, president and CEO of First Majestic Silver.
And for today's rant, we'll talk about layoffs, more and more layoffs. And we'll also talk about the insanity that has become Bed Bath & Beyond.
And remember, you can email us at feedback@investorhour.com and tell us what's on your mind.
That and more right now on the Stansberry Investor Hour. Okay, so a couple of shows ago, we did talk about some of the data that we got off of layoffs, FYI. And it's basically just like a tech rout of layoffs. Just tens of thousands of people. I don't even know what the total is up to now, but at big companies, Meta, Google, Amazon, everybody just laying people off, Salesforce.com. And that's not done, is it? It's still moving.
No, the latest one that I am looking at and just heard about was Yahoo, the old search engine giant from eons ago, but they're laid off 20% of their workforce, which is about 1,600 people, but still that 20% number gets you and kind of shows you, you know, the impact that companies are dealing with.
Yeah, it does. Right now. You're probably not addicted to Twitter the way I am, but like recently, it's been really buggy. I mean, and of course, Elon Musk laid off like half the people, and now finally, you know, it's starting to have these problems. Like you go in every now and then, and I'm told that I can't tweet anymore because I've reached my daily limit. And the daily limit is something like 2,400. I'm not that crazy. I don't do 2,400 a day. So I know that it's buggy. And I did some Googling and stuff, and there are systems problems. And I'm like, Elon, did you fire the person who takes care of, you know, this part of the system? And I wonder about all of these things.
Likely. Yeah. I mean, very likely that he fired or they quit. The, you know, what was it, like 75% of their staff is gone. So it's
crazy.
There's really no way. Twitter, I mean, that's more of a, I'd say that's less of an economic, you know, caused problem. That was more self-inflicted. You know, I think Twitter's been struggling as a business for a long time, and Elon just is lighting it on fire at the moment. So it's,
absolutely.
But yes, point taken. That one's a little different to me than Yahoo, which I haven't thought about Yahoo in a very long time. But
I know,
yeah, these layoffs are piling up, and you know, honestly, if Twitter went away, you know,
so let me ask you this:
tomorrow, I think I'd be okay with it. Actually,
yeah I know. Yeah, if I could never log in again, I'd be like, thank you, Lord.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. So these tech layoffs, it seems like, you know, there's a new one every other day of some size, but then, you know, you get these big ones every now and then, like Yahoo is the latest one. So it kind of makes me wonder about that last jobs beat. You know, it was like 8 Sigma off the charts. They were expecting like 187,000 or something. And it was like 500,000 new jobs.
Right.
I mean, okay, there's some reopening effects maybe still in play, but that much with all those layoffs happening, like who's getting hired? I don't know. It seems strange to me now.
And we got some good data this week from our Newswire editor, Scott Garlis, who, you know, basically showed that the data was revised, you know, throughout the year, or from the numbers throughout the year, the population estimate increased by almost 1 million people, and along with the civilian labor force by 871,000 people. And so a lot, that increased the numbers significantly, or skewed the numbers in that year. You know, it was for January, so it took the revisions from last year. So basically, maybe we shouldn't get all worked up by that January data. So you're getting, to me, that says, yeah, these layoffs are happening in tech and the labor market is weakening a bit still. to maybe this is more of an outlier jobs report than anything. So we'll keep an eye on those going forward.
Okay. So, boy, I hate to sort of rain on our own parade here, but I forget what I was doing recently, and the thought popped into my head, like, why do I pay attention to all this, you know, picayune economic data? Is it really telling me anything? And is it really, does it really have a chance of changing my view that, you know, the biggest mega bubble of all time just burst and it's still bursting? We're still closer to the top than the bottom of it. And it, you know, I don't know. I have to wonder, like, an example, let me give you an example of what I mean. This Bed Bath & Beyond thing. By all reason, that company should have been bankrupt by now, right? Should have been bankrupt. The stock is worthless. And yet it recently soared 100% in a single day. And it just so happened the very next day, they were able to basically raise $1 billion. Now, they didn't raise $1 billion right away. It's like $300 million up front, then $800 million later on, something like that. But the fact that they're able to do it at all is crazy. And I think the only reason they could do it is because all of these crazy meme stock people have just run the volume up in the stock, and the market cap is much higher than it would have been, right? So you look at this episode, and then I have to ask, like, the Fed has tightened? They've tightened faster than ever in their history? This doesn't look tight to me. This looks like the biggest mega bubble in history is still sailing on. I mean, I don't know. Help me out here. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I don't think you need much help. You got it figured out. I'm the wrong person to ask about these sort of things because I have moved past GameStop and all of that stuff. You know, it was fun for a little bit, but personally, I've moved past it. So I'm too rational sometimes to get involved in the stories themselves. I don't blame you for writing about it and talking about it, though, because it is. And it does fit with what, you know, is boring jobs data, too. Like, the jobs market, you know, these layoffs are happening in tech, but overall, you know, the unemployment rate's still at, like, a 50-year low. And you got people, you know, Bed Bath & Beyond on its last fumes and getting, you know, still getting attention and money. We're not in the bottom of a recession, I don't think. So it's there's still a lot, you know, like we've said, I think this bubble, you know, you could see it on a lot of charts, and you just wonder how those charts are going to look 5 or 10 years from now. At least I do. Just like, how long does this deflation, ironically, of the bubble last, and how long does it need to take, I guess, is the question.
Yeah. And all of these things, people look at historical averages, you know, the average length of a bear market and all this stuff. And I don't want to say it's different this time. I never want to say it's different this time. But my point is that really it's not different this time, because when you've had these past huge mega bubble events in 1929, March of 2000 for the NASDAQ, Japan 1989, the markets went sideways. You know, the affected markets went sideways for years afterwards. So, like, you know, I think it's reasonable to expect the same thing this time. But again, like, the key insight there, you have to agree that it was one of those massive mega bubble events. If you don't agree with that, then you're going to be sitting here looking for the bottom and thinking, well, you know, when's the new bull market going to start? I got to check my watch here. Is it starting yet? You know, it's your mindset is going to be completely, basically opposite of mine. Mine is like, not where's the bottom, but how do we get through this next potentially 10 plus year slog of flat returns in stocks? What do we do? This is different. It's different than the last 15 years. Next 15 is different than the last 15. Nassim Taleb said, it was in a Bloomberg interview recently, and he said, you know, Disneyland is over, right? The next 15 years will not look like the last. And to me, that's the reasonable paradigm. That's the one where you say, okay, it's not different this time. I guess, you know, I can be wrong, but...
Well, I would say, you know, even if... say, even if you are wrong, or even if somebody it doesn't agree with that or think that's going to happen, like, still, you could still consider it and prepare for it. Like, why would you ever think that the past performance does not guarantee future results? You know, like, why would you? Don't assume that. You know, it would be nice if you had another record long bull market starting right now.
Oh, I'd take it all day long. Yeah, bring it. Hey, I can be long stocks again in a big bad way. And we're long all the time. We find things all the time in extreme value in the Farish report, but they're different things now.
Right. But yeah, and with interest rates already above their previous cycle peak, things are already different. So it's
right.
You know, that's different. And that's a big difference. It's not the only thing to look at, but it's a big difference. And again, like, personally, I'm great with a little higher interest rates and able to, you know, put my cash into stuff that'll just, you know, generate a small, you know, relatively not risky amount of return, but a return. And you know, inflation's still eating away at it, but inflation's always going to be there. So you got to keep pace a bit how you can. So I'm, you know, personally, I'm okay with the higher interest rate environment, but I know not everybody.
Oh, sure.
If you're taking out loans and that sort of thing, that's not, you know, the greatest for you. But, you know my point is you can use this, as long as you kind of recognize the environment that we are in now. You know, who knows what's going to happen, but we are in now, and just go with it.
Go with it, yes.
Go with
recognize
it.
The environment and go with it.
Just roll with
like
it.
That.
There we are. Very right. profound so, words.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, my original point, though, I was like, I mean, I certainly pay plenty of attention to this data. I feel like I can't, you know, I can't look away. I can't not pay attention to it. So I will continue to do so, but I'll question what I think I'm doing every time, because I think, you know, my thesis hasn't changed.
Yeah, I don't think you ever want to try. I try not to look too much at one single data point and make too much of it. You know, and you stick in the spirit of Jerome Powell. You gotta think about a couple months in a row before saying anything, and then be very slow and deliberate. And but yeah, I mean, that's in the spirit. He has got the right spirit there. You gotta let these things play out a little bit.
That's right. If you're the kind of person who wants to follow a trend, or, you know, if you're like Steve Sugarrood, he waits for, you know. He likes stocks that are cheap and hated, but in an uptrend. So that requires some patience and some confirmation from the market. That's not really how I roll, but you know, a lot. I think a lot of people have that basic idea. They want to see how it goes before they commit. And I think it's a typical sort of human thing. I almost called it a foible, but I don't know if it always is, because I'm sure. Plenty of people, I know Steve Sugarrood has made plenty of money doing that. So, you know, no worries.
Different
Wait
strokes for different folks.
Yep. All right. Well, on that note, let's go ahead and talk with Keith Neumeyer, who finally, I'm getting to talk with Keith Neumeyer. I've been trying to meet this guy at conferences and various places for like 10 or 15 years, and finally he and I are going to speak. I look forward to doing so, because he is one of the absolute tippy-top people in the mining world. And, you know, there are a lot of people in the mining world that you should not talk to. Fortunately, Keith is one of the few that you must talk to, and we're going to do that. Let's do it right now. The man who called the 2008 and 2020 crashes has a new prediction. Joel Lipman's work has been followed by the top 10 money managers in the world and more than half of the top 300 money managers. And he's warning a financial heist is coming to America this year, and it could be far worse than a market crash. He doesn't mean to alarm you, but ignoring him could be your costliest mistake of 2023. In fact, he was invited to speak about this at the Harvard Business Club to a packed audience. Even the U.S. Pentagon has invited him to share his evidence. If it comes to pass and you're not ready, it could be a catastrophic event. This is why I strongly encourage you to read about his warning totally free today. It's all laid out in a free report he's put together. Get the facts yourself. Go to www.2023financialheist.com to get your free copy of this report. You can learn how to immediately prepare for what Joel sees coming. Again, that's www.2023financialheist.com for a free copy of his new report. Keith, welcome to the show. Good to have you here.
Dan, it's nice meeting you for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah, we've almost crossed paths several times over the years. I know at various mining events and things, but here we finally are. So it's good to finally talk with you. And of course, I've been kind of interested in talking with a lot of people in the mining industry lately. I keep hearing things like, you know, commodities are as cheap as they've ever been, for example. So I want to talk to all the folks like you who have founded and who run mining companies. Of course, you run First Majestic. You guys produce what, silver in Mexico and gold in Nevada?
And some gold in Mexico as well.
Yep. Mm-hmm. But the decision, the first thing I'm wondering about is why silver? You know, your First Majestic, the ticker symbol's AG. So you guys are well known as a big silver producer.
Yeah.
Why silver? Why wouldn't you go into some other metal?
Well, I came from a copper company. I put together First Quantum Minerals back in 1992. And before 1992, I was in a high technology company. And so I was really, I've never been, I'm not a geologist. So, exploration to me is like going to a casino in Vegas. So not that I haven't made money on exploration stocks and I don't, and of course, exploration is very important for mining companies. It's just, for me, I want to be in revenue as quickly as possible. Because I don't want to be spending 5 or 10 years trying to develop a resource or trying to permit an asset to get into production. So I started a copper company. We were in production in Africa. I was in production within a year or two after me founding that business. And it turned into quite a successful venture. And I left First Quantum in 2000. And I put First Majestic together in 2002. And I looked at, coming from copper, copper is a very important industrial metal. So, and coming from a high technology company prior to that, revenue's important to me. So I didn't want to become a gold exploration company. I didn't want to become a gold company because there are just so many gold companies out there. I looked at the silver space. I was actually quite enamored by it. And I just couldn't believe that silver was trading at $5 an ounce. And then, I just bought a cell phone, a few years earlier, and, I've got a laptop, and I remember buying my first computer, and, this kind of ages me a little bit, but, fax machines and, all the other different technologies that we started to adopt as a human race, in the mid-80s and beyond, I just kind of put two and two together, and I said, well, it's just not copper. Copper is the highway. We need that, of course, but silver's the glue that holds everything together. And without silver, none of this stuff is going to work. And there was no silver companies out there. And I looked at the supply-demand fundamentals of silver, and I was just amazed by it. So I put together a silver company.
Right. And when you say none of this stuff is going to work, this stuff being, usually when people say that to me at this time, as we speak in early 2023, they're talking about, electric vehicles and everything else that is alleged to, be environmentally friendly.
Well, of course, there's all that. But don't even go back before, we start talking about the green revolution. What about your refrigerator? What about your freezer? I remember, during COVID 2020, I was talking to my traders in New York who I deal with, selling silver. The demand from silver from the freezer manufacturing companies was just exploded because everyone's at home and they're all out buying meat and filling up their freezers. And everyone went to Costco and wherever they went, to buy freezers. And the freezers manufacturers in the United States had a heck of a time keeping up with it because they couldn't get the silver. Hadn't thought of that actually, but that's what this fellow told me. And, whether it's toasters, whether it's automobiles, whether, you name it, your iPhone, your iPad, your computer, all these gadgets that we rely on a daily basis, including this this call we're having right now, wouldn't happen without silver.
Okay, let's ask harder questions now. When I write two newsletters, and in one of them, basically, I've told my readers that we're probably never going to recommend a mining company because it's just a really to be fair, I've recommended royalty companies and asset management companies focused on resources, but never a mining company because, you know the complaints, right? I'll just highly capital intensive, highly cyclical, possible, political problems where depending on where you're mining. You know, the list is long, unionized workforces, expensive workforces, just armies of people and extraordinarily expensive machines. And the list goes on.
Very cash intensive business.
Yeah. So what can you tell a guy like me? I want to give my readers some good news because I think we could be on the cusp of a serious cycle here, and I want to have something good to say about some mining companies. So what do you got?
Well, look, I can tell you the mining sector is likely the most difficult sector in the world, and we could talk for hours and rip it. You mentioned a lot of great highlights and pointed at a number of challenges that the mining sector has, I like challenges and sure it gets frustrating sometimes. And, the people in the mining sector, these are some of the, most patient, and stubborn, of course, individuals that are in business, because, when from discovery to production, you could be talking about 10, 20, 30, 40 years, and a lot of people just don't have that patience. I've made quite a significant amount of money over the last 35 years in the mining sector, and I sometimes I hate it because it absolutely drives me crazy. But it's in my career. I've been doing it for a long time, and I think the mining sector brings a huge amount of value to the human race. Without mining, we couldn't do anything really. We'd be back in caves. All the stuff that we take for granted, the things behind me in this room, the things behind you in your room, where you're living, and all the things you use every day, we all use every day, just would not simply be there, and we wouldn't be comfortable in our own shoes, without mining.
Sure.
And, so I'm proud of the mining sector. I'm proud of what we bring to society. It's vital, and I'm happy to be a part of it. But yeah, there's tons of challenges from an investor perspective. We can talk about the importance of mining all day long, but have our debates. Mm-hmm. But from an investor point of view, if your audience is wanting to look at the mining sector to make investments, as you say, we could be going into another bull market, which I actually think we are. I look at today, like 2000, 2001, 2002, when the NASDAQ peaked out at 5,000 in March of 2020, and over the next 12 years, gold went from $250 to $1,900, and silver went from 5 to 50. And, we had a huge bull market that lasted 10 years. A lot of people made a lot of money. And I think we're going back into almost an identical setup. But for investors, they have to look at management teams first. So, don't get sucked into a promoter that is, saying he's got the best thing since sliced bread. And, and because there's a lot of slick guys out there, and in any bull market, a lot of used car salesmen, end up showing up in the space and, sucking a lot of money out of, unwitting, retail investors' hands, thinking that they're going to, make 10 or 20 times their money or whatever the case may be. But, always look at the management. Go to the websites, look at what have these people done? Have they made money for investors in the past? Are they 25 years old and this is their first company that they're starting? Be cautious. Okay. Are they 50 or 60 years old and they've, created a couple billion-dollar companies and made a lot of people a lot of money? Okay. Well, then, at least you've checked a box and your likelihood of making money on, on that individual or that group's next company, you know, is more likely than not, you know, because they're, you know, they're not going to bring some company to float some company that, you know, is going to fail, particularly late in life. Like, well, why does someone in their 50s and 60s want to bring a failure to the market? That's like very, very unlikely. So, you know, be very aware of that. Secondly, look at jurisdiction. Jurisdiction is very important. As you pointed out about political risk and so on and so forth, it's big. And in the mining sector, it's getting harder. You know, so in places like, you know, Nevada, Arizona, you know, even Mexico is getting more difficult. But, you know, we've been in Mexico for 20 years and, you know, we know it quite well. But I would not be going into Peru, Argentina, Bolivia, you know, these places I would just like avoid like a plague. You know, China, Russia, you know, even some of the Canadian provinces. You know, I don't like British Columbia in particular, even though other people, you know, think BC is a good place. I do, you know, I find it challenging. You know, Ontario, Quebec are great, great jurisdictions. So, you know, just look at jurisdictions is important. And then look at the asset. You know, why? And a lot of people aren't geologists, so, you know, they're probably not qualified even to really look at the quality of the asset and understand whether it's economic or not. But, you know, right. I looked at some drill results the other day of this junior that I own, and the drill results, you know, showed, you know, 10, 12 grams gold intersections over, you know, 10 or 20 meters, which is actually not bad, right? But that I looked at the depth. Is 1,500 meters under the surface of the earth. And I'm going like, what? Like, give me a break. Like, you know, this thing will never be in production, you know, and if it is, it's going to be a lot, you know, way, way into the future. And, you know, you need $5,000 gold prices just to make something like that even economic. So, you know, and I own another company that's drilling right now, you know, has half the grades as that company, but it's the mineralization starts at surface and goes down 500-600 meters. All right. So there, okay. So that's super easy to get to and super cheap to get to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are things that investors just have to do some research about and, you know, maybe ask around among people that, you know the sector a little bit better.
All right. And, are you sort of like committed to, that you're only going to wind up operating in Mexico and Nevada, or are you sort of thinking about the company in 10 or 15 or 20 years and looking at other jurisdictions?
Yeah, well, this year is our 20th year. And, you know, we started in Mexico back in 2003. And you know, I like Mexico a lot. If the right asset came up tomorrow, and it met all our M&A criteria, we would have no problem buying another asset in Mexico. You know, but we're spending most of our time looking at assets in the United States. We like Nevada quite a lot. We just bought, of course, a mine in Nevada. We're focusing on silver, and we're a silver company, but we are producing more gold than we've ever produced in the company's history. We want to get that kind of leaned a little bit closer to silver. So we're struggling a little bit trying to find a really good, you know, a nice size silver mine or silver asset. Arizona is interesting. Idaho, you know, these are, you know, mining friendly jurisdictions. And we're, you know, scouring, you know, the databases. And, you know, we're also looking into Quebec and Ontario. You know, these are interesting jurisdictions for us. We've got some eyeballs on Australia and some places in Europe as well. So we're constantly looking for ideas.
Okay. And you've mentioned just a moment ago, you were saying, you know, most people, they don't know how to look at drill results. It's mining is so technical. The average investor looks at it as, I don't know if this is good or not. So I wonder if we could help our listeners get a little bit closer. Like you have, according to your website, you have 4 producing mines. And so maybe I wonder if you could kind of either like outright just kind of sell me on what's great about these mines, or just tell me, is there a list of a few things that an investor could sort of, a new investor, like a novice mining investor, could sort of learn to identify as favorable characteristics? you know, outside of the things we just, you know, the jurisdiction and so forth that we've already mentioned.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can't overstate the importance of jurisdiction. So, you know, that's obviously number one.
Okay.
But, you know, grades are also very important. And then, you know, when you talk about grades, it's just, you know, comes down to metallurgy as well. And then we're getting a little bit deep in the weeds here, but,
oh yeah, I know we would.
Yeah, it's metallurgy is so important. And, you know, for example, if silver is got, you know, you're drilling a hole and you drill a hole into and you hit silver, you're always, you know, from a geology point of view, you're going to get super excited, say, oh, we hit some metal and, oh, look at the grades, you know, 200-300 grams silver, which is, you know, anywhere from 7 or 8 ounces to 10 ounces of silver per ton, you know, which, you know, at 10 ounces at today's prices, that's $240 rock on a per ton basis. And to extract that ton of ore, depending on how deep it is into the earth's surface, and this is where we get to depth again, you know, if it's an open pit mine, if that ton of dirt rock is sitting right on surface, it might cost you, you know, $15 to mine it and process it, right? Deeper it goes, the costs go up. So you know, in an underground mine that's, you know, and these are just numbers on the back of an envelope, okay? Don't hold me exactly to these numbers. I'm just trying to give you kind of a guideline. So you
got it.
You know, so you're down, call it 300 meters, and so your costs per ton are now $70, right? All mm-hmm. in extraction, production, from the time you pull that rock out of the ground to the time you get a block of silver, you know, is $70. So you make still making good money, right? At that, because your rock is worth $240. And as you go deeper, your costs go up. Then you get into metallurgy. So we're assuming if you got 10 ounces of silver in a ton of rock, and silver is trading at $24 an ounce today, you get 100% of that silver out of the rock. And that's what you call metallurgy, okay? You never get 100% of the metal, right? There's always something there to interfere with that, right? Because the innate Mother Nature, you know, is very, you know, complicated. And to extract that, you've got to use all kinds of chemicals and blah, 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 you know, to get that metal out of that rock. Now, the second you add anything else, like copper, it gets complicated because copper is going to interfere with your recovery of silver, and the silver is worth way more than the copper. So you want the silver. Copper is important, but you'd rather throw the copper in the garbage into the tailings dam in to get as much silver as possible, right? If lead's there, zinc's there, it gets way more complicated. So all of a sudden, and Mother Nature, when you drill a hole, you get often a bunch of different kinds of metal in your rock, in your ton of ore, and the recoveries, you know, ratchet down. So all of a sudden, you know, as an investor, you're looking at a mining company. One of the things you want to do is see what their recoveries are, and you'll see if it's a complex ore body, you know, that's got silver, copper, lead, and zinc in it. It's not unusual, you know, for them to only be getting 60% of that silver, you know, maybe 70% of that silver if they're lucky. And the lead and the zinc are worth nothing to them, you know, and it's going to the tailings dams, it's going into waste, and the copper is likely, because of what they have to do is if they're going to extract it, and it has to be a huge ore body. Like if you got like one of these big, huge porphyry mines in Arizona, you know, where you can build a 100,000 ton a day operation, okay, you're Freeport McMoRan, and then you're going to build a $1 billion mill to have multiple circuits where you're going to throw this rock into multiple circuits to get your copper, lead, zinc, and silver out because you got this huge ore body that's going to last 50 years and you're willing to spend $1 billion on the mill to get all these metals out. But that's not very common, right? Most of these junior mining companies that we're dealing with, including First Majestic, we don't have any big mines like that. Our mines are good size, but they're not that large. So we're producing, you know, 3,000 tons a day, you know, through our largest two mines. And at 3,000 tons a day, you know, you you know, you start throwing some, you know, difficult metallurgy or some, some metal into some more difficult metals into that mix, and all of a sudden the economics get thrown out because you've got the one circuit that's designed to pull the silver out, and the silver and the gold come together. So if you pull the silver and the gold out, you don't have a circuit that pulls the lead and zinc or copper out. All that goes into the waste dump, into the tailings, because it would just cost you way too much money, to build circuits to pull all those other metals out. But to my point is, metallurgy is very important, because all those metals that you're throwing into the waste dump, it interferes with your recovery of gold and silver. Hopefully that wasn't too complicated, but it's
that's okay. I always assume that the listeners are taking good notes.
Okay. I tried to avoid getting too deep into the weeds, but it's kind of hard.
Sure. Yeah. All right. So I do want to talk about silver prices. Our listeners are going to be sitting here saying, is silver going to go up? That's what they want to know, right? Is silver going to go up soon?
Yeah.
How much? And my observation, just generally over the, just investing in various things, including mining companies over the last 30 years, is that silver is kind of a strange animal, because when you look at a long-term chart of it, it's very, very spiky. It seems like, as an investor looking at that chart, I think, well, I guess I just always want to own some silver or some silver equities, and I want to look for those spikes and sell into them. Like, that's my big strategy. How does that sound to you?
Well, you would have been right, I suppose. So that was probably a great strategy. And I don't blame you for doing that. And, I do that myself. I trade this market, not First Majestic, but because I can't really trade First Majestic. But, I'm in this business. I know it quite well. So I'm always, looking at juniors and, try and make a little bit of money on the side, by investing in, some of these smaller companies. And yeah, you've got to, these things will spike, all of a sudden, silver, gold, whatever, uranium, whatever the commodity is that you're trading, the stock will go up 300-500% sometimes, which is fantastic. And that's what the mining sector can do for you if your timing is right. But you have to be smart as an investor. If you're up 300%, you better be selling some. If you don't, you're an idiot. If you're up 500%, I would suggest you're out of the stock completely. I know some people want to wait for that 10 bagger. 10 baggers don't come very often. They're very, very rare. They do come, but often a 10 bagger happens so quickly that you're light. You might be lucky enough to hold on to it and actually, make, 10 times your money, but, don't wait for that. Take these profits. When you're investing in these stocks, these mining stocks, you scale in when you're buying and you scale out when you're selling. It's simple as that. You have to do that because this industry is so speculative, and it can move so quickly in either directions, either up or down. And you've got to be there to take advantage of it. And it's a challenge. But, when it comes to silver prices themselves, look, I'll give you some fundamental numbers. And might shock you a little bit. So the solar industry in 2022, now we don't know the exact numbers yet because they're still being compulated, but we're estimating that the solar panel industry consumed 140 million ounces of silver in 2022. Think the electric car industry consumed around 90 to 100 million ounces of silver in 2022. So there's two industries that consumed around, call it 250 million ounces of silver, thereabouts, just for a round number perspective. The total consumption of silver in all industries in 2022, we're thinking is going to come in at the lowest is 1.2 billion ounces, or it could be as high as 1.4 billion ounces of consumption. And the miners, and of course we don't know the number yet, but we think the miners produced on a low side 800 million ounces, high side 825 million ounces. So you're in a market where the miners produce 825 million ounces and the consumers consumed 1.2 billion ounces. You know, interesting supply-demand fundamentals, right?
Right.
You know, in 2023, estimates are solar panels are going to consume something in the order of 160 million ounces of solar, and electric cars are going to break through 100 million ounces of solar. The miners aren't going to produce any more metal. Like the mining sector is at its limit. It can't produce more silver. So, you know, there's not, the mines aren't there. You know, the permits aren't there. You know, you're talking about drilling, discovering, permitting, building. You know, this is a long, long process. So
decades.
Yeah. So, you know, this 800 million ounces, even if the mining sector could produce 900 million ounces, which is never done. The peak of silver production was in 2016. 2015, and it produced 880 million ounces of silver. So, and that was, you know, because a couple of mines came on online and so on and so forth. But it's never hit that number since. During COVID, it dropped all the way down to 740 million ounces, you know, because of all the shutdowns. So, you know, we're struggling as a sector to get our production up. And in a huge environment of demand, we, you know, the miners just can't fill that demand. So where's the silver coming from? You know, it's coming from hoards. It's coming from, you know, wherever it's coming from, you know, it is being found somewhere, but, you know, there's not an end, you know, there is an end to the supply, and it's going to affect prices in a dramatic way. I did come up with the phrase, you know, triple digit silver about 10 years ago, and people laughed at me when I coined that phrase, and you know, now the last couple of years had a few people join me with that prediction. So I think eventually I will be right. Hopefully, I'm alive when it happens.
I hope that I'm alive when that happens, and I will be selling aggressively into that. I can't wait.
And you probably should.
So let's call silver, like I'm looking at 2370 bid, 2380 ask. Just for round numbers, let's just call it 24. It sounds like you're telling me, you know, more silver isn't coming online. Is 24 not enough of an enticement for new production to come online or no?
Not even close. So when silver hit $50 back in April of 2011, recycling in 2011 hit 250 million ounces. In 2022, I don't know the exact number yet because they're not public, but I would bet you that the recycling was somewhere around 125 million ounces of silver. It would be like 2021 was about that, so I wouldn't expect 2022 to be much different. So so the purpose of me mentioning that is, you know, so the households, where did all this silver come from? It came from, you know, little old ladies' silverware. Really, you know, quite frankly, you know, households started bringing all their silver into, you know, the system for melting down and selling. And so recycling spiked. It doubled in 2011 from previous levels. That's not going to happen again because all that silver is gone. It's already been melted. All that silver has been put into industry, put into automobiles, put into computers or wherever the heck it's gone. So, you know, the industry believes, you know, I'm a believer of what I'm about to say, is that, you know, you would have to probably see $100 silver for the same phenomenon to occur. Because I can tell you, like this cell phone here, this is an iPhone, and there's about $3 to $5 worth of silver in this thing. And and these companies are very good at making it very difficult to get this metal out of that iPhone. It's so expensive, and you know, there's not a technology yet that's economic to pull all the precious metals out of this thing. Every company's gone bankrupt trying to do it. You know, the Chinese, you know, used to take all this computer waste up until January 1st, 2020. They could have been 2019. You might want to check that, but they stopped importing electronic waste from North America. So us as North Americans used to just send all our computers, you know, to China, and they would put it in huge ovens and melt it down and extract all the copper, gold, silver, and lead and zinc and all the other, you know, metals that were in the darn thing. But it was creating so much pollution in China that the politicians said, hey, we got to shut these things down. And they shut 17 smelters down in 2019 or 2020 that were, their only business was burning commuter waste. And they were getting it from Europe. They were getting it from, you know, North America. And now all this computer waste is building up. And, we don't know what to do with it. And like, when was the last time you've recycled a 40-inch television? You know, a 40-inch television has 3 ounces of silver in it. And, have you ever taken one to the recycling depot? No. Like, who's done that? You know, this guy in a washer, dryer. You know, when you buy a new washing machine, you know, and the company comes and picks up your old one, and where does it go? You know, they try to take out the easy stuff, of course, and they try to, you know, what copper wiring and all that kind of stuff is simple to cut out. But, you know, you get into the, you know, the soldering and all the silver components and forget it. It's just like, who's going to do that work? Where's the technology to do that? So all this stuff just goes into waste.
Keith, all of which is to say that anybody who says that's a source of supply is talking out their ear.
We would need, you know, triple digit silver to incentivize industry. Because first of all, the technology doesn't exist.
Okay.
Because I personally invested in 3 recycling companies. Two are bankrupt. One is still alive. The one that's still alive, I actually made a little bit of money on it. The other two never ended up going public, and I lost money on both of them. We have to, as a human race, figure this out, because eventually we're going to be mining waste dumps. You know, we're going to, because the mining sector is getting more challenging. And, 100 years from now, we'll be going into these old waste dumps and pulling out metal. I'm pretty certain of it, but we need a technology to be able to do it. You know, today, silver at $24 an ounce, you know, you don't incentivize the miners, you know, because, our cutoff grades, you know, at current metal prices are, you know, around 100 grams, which, you know, for your listeners probably doesn't mean very much, but, you know, call it 3 ounces of silver. So the rock has to be worth at least $75 to $100 a ton to make it attractive enough for the mining company to pull out of the ground to hopefully try to make a profit, right? And you have to have enough of it in the tons wise to make it economic to build a mill, right? And build the roads and the electrical infrastructure and the town and all the stuff you got to do, you know. So there's got to be enough of this stuff, enough of this rock, right? And there's lots of projects out there that have silver in them. High up in the Andes, you know, you want to go 15,000 meters up in the Andes in Peru and try to bring water up there and electricity up there and build a mill up there and extract ore up there and deal with the communities up there and get permits up there. And oh my God, like, you know, it's a lot of friggin' work. And you're going to spend 20 years doing that to try to get your first, you know, ounce of silver out of the ground and at $24 an ounce. You know, these mines are like 30 grams silver, basically 1 ounce of silver. So the ore is only worth about $25 or $24 a ton. And you're going to have to put a billion or more into this mill. No one's going to do it. So there's no new supply coming.
Right. Does this mean that you're not making money at $24 an ounce?
No, we make money, but I'm saying the margins are tight. Oh, yeah. Like our costs are $16-17 an ounce. And that's up, you know, over and you know, go back 3 years, and our costs would have been about $11-12 an ounce. So over a space of about 3, you know, some odd years, maybe the cost. You know, that's inflation. I'd say it's people are a big issue because the kids today aren't being educated in mining. You know, they're becoming lawyers and accountants and whatever they're becoming. But they're not becoming mining engineers. They're not becoming geologists. So there's a huge brain drain happening right now in the mining sector and in the oil and gas sector as well. You know, resources across the board. You know, it just seems to be a dirty business that, you know, people don't want to work for, unfortunately, which is a real shame. And, so, you know, our employee costs are going up. Our energy costs are going up.
Boy, if I were a younger man, I'd change careers. So it sounds like, just for our listeners' sake, you understand what Keith is saying here. Like, he's basically got a silver mining company with some amount of margin, tight margins, he said, and we're in an environment where there's no incentive for anybody to build a new one. So it's kind of and we think that we're on the cusp of a new bull market here, maybe. So it's kind of an exciting time to be in your position, Keith, and to be, of course, riding along as a shareholder, it sounds like.
Well, I think so. Look, think of it this way. For every dollar move in silver prices, our top line is affected by something in the order of, $37 to $40 million. So our revenue in 2022 was about $700 million. We're a reasonable sized company. So we see a $5 move in silver prices, which I think we'll see much greater than that. But a $5 move is $150 to $200 million extra revenue on our top line, and our costs are fixed. Our costs don't go up. So all that extra revenue just drops right to the bottom line as pure profit. And that's what's the beauty of being on the right side of a mining investment. If your timing is good, your leverage is just incredible because, the market, we have an increase in revenue to that degree, then the market puts a multiple on that. Right. So whatever that multiple the market puts on, that adds right to your market cap. So, that's why you get these crazy, moves on the mining stocks because the leverage is just amazing.
Well, and in a really nice bull run in a year or two, that's how a stock like yours can be a multi-bagger, just like that.
Yeah.
So, Keith, we've come to the end of our time here, but I just have one more question, and that is my standard final question. It's the same for every guest, no matter what the topic, even if it's a non-financial topic, which it sometimes is. Same question for everybody, and that is, if you could leave our listeners with a single thought today, what might that be?
Don't let investing is a very personal thing, and don't fall in love with an investment, for one, but also don't let anyone convince you to make an investment or make a decision to sell an investment. You're your own maker, and everyone has their own personal financial needs and requirements, you just take care of yourself and you make your own personal investments based on your own personal criteria and do your due diligence. Spend the time. This is your money. People go to the shopping center and try to find the best deal in the shopping center. I don't know why they don't try to find the best deal when they're buying a stock. Treat your investments like you would treat any kind of spending that you would do. Spend the time, the energy, put the work in, and make a decision, and then keep up to date on it because. Sometimes fundamentals change. Sometimes your investment could be the wrong decision, and you have to be willing to sell it if you're wrong. But if you're right and the stock goes down, it doesn't mean you'd sell it. Don't get sucked into selling low and buying high. Try to listen to guys like yourself and try to educate yourself and hook yourself in with all the different podcasts. There's lots of great people out there, and I don't know. Maybe I said too much, but
no. It's the message is clear, right? You take responsibility. It's your thing. It's a personal thing. It's not off the shelf. Nobody can really tell you how to do it.
No,
I've said the same thing many times. Okay. It's very personal. Mm-hmm. It's a personal thing. It's up to you.
Yeah.
How you want to do it, et cetera. So yeah. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that will be a well-received message, but thanks for being here. Really good to talk to you.
Yeah, and great talking to you, Dan, and our first time, obviously, we spoke, thanks for the opportunity, and maybe we can talk again in the future.
Yeah, for sure. We will do that.
Great.
All right, thanks.
Okay, thanks, Dan.
Many mainstream analysts are predicting that stocks will recover soon.
But I say we'll instead witness a cash frenzy unlike we've experienced in 21 years before stocks recover. And I'm urging Americans not to buy a single stock until they see it. I predicted the Lehman Brothers crash in 2008, and I called the top of the NASDAQ in 2021. But this is the number one most important thing to pay attention to for 2023. And I'm not talking about another market crash or politics or inflation or any of these other things. As all this unfolds, the financial consequences of what I'm talking about could last for several decades. If you don't understand what's happening, there will be winners and losers. And now is the time to decide which one you'll be. This is why I strongly encourage you to read about my warning totally free today. It's all spelled out in a free report we've put together. Get the facts yourself. Go to www.stockdeadzone.com to get your free copy of this report. You can learn how to get my 4 steps to prepare for what's coming. Again, that's www.stockdeadzone for a free copy of this new report.
Well, that was a lot of fun. As I said at the beginning, I've been trying to meet Keith for years and been very close to doing so. And people have said, hey, you should meet this guy. And we finally, this is the first time we've ever spoken. And I hope that, I hope you were taking some good notes, because he gave you a lot of information there. And a lot of really good guidelines about grades and political jurisdictions and, you know, the quantity. Remember, he talked about 100 grams per ton being sounding like a kind of a minimum grade. And he explained, you know, some of the dynamics with some hypothetical pricing and expenses and things. So that was really informative. And it was really informative in an area that we hardly ever talk about. I think we've had one other guest in the, 4 or 5 years I've been doing this, 3 or 4, something like that. I don't know, talking about silver. So this is like silver guest number 2. Maybe we'll have to, we'll try to fix that and find somebody else in the silver industry. But yeah, Keith is like one of the top guys. If you're interested in silver as an investment, you really should pay attention to his company. Even if you don't buy the stock, you should go on their website, First Majestic Silver, and just read the presentations and the documents and everything, and you'll learn a lot about silver. You can follow him on Twitter, too. I follow him on Twitter. But that was great. I really enjoyed that. All right, well, that's another interview, and that's another episode of the Stansberry Investor Hour. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. We do provide a transcript for every episode. Just go to www.investorhour.com, click on the episode you want, scroll all the way down, click on the word transcript, and enjoy. If you like this episode and know anybody else who might like it, tell them to check it out on their podcast app or at investorhour.com. And do me a favor, subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And while you're there, help us grow with a rate and a review. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @InvestorHour. On Twitter, our handle is @Investor_Hour. Have a guest you want us to interview? Drop us a note, feedback@InvestorHour.com, or call our listener feedback line, 800-381-2357. Tell us what's on your mind and hear your voice on the show. For my co-host, Corey McLaughlin, till next week, I'm Dan Ferris. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Stansberry Investor Hour. To access today's notes and receive notice of upcoming episodes, go to investorhour.com and enter your email. Have a question for Dan? Send him an email, feedback@investorhour.com. This broadcast is for entertainment purposes only and should not be considered personalized investment advice. Trading stocks and all other financial instruments involves risk. You should not make any investment decision based solely on what you hear. Stansberry Investor Hour is produced by Stansberry Research and is copyrighted by the Stansberry Radio Network.
Opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the contributor and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Stansberry Research, its parent company, or affiliates. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this program as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of opinion. Neither Stansberry Research nor its parent company or affiliates warrant the completeness or accuracy of the information expressed on this program, and it should not be relied upon as such. Stansberry Research, its affiliates and subsidiaries are not under any obligation to update or correct any information provided on the program. The statements and opinions expressed on this program are subject to change without notice. No part of the contributor's compensation from Stansberry Research is related to the specific opinions they express. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Stansberry Research does not guarantee any specific outcome or profit. You should be aware of the real risk of loss in following any strategy or investment discussed on this program. Strategies or investments discussed may fluctuate in price or value. Investors may get back less than invested. Investments or strategies mentioned on this program may not be suitable for you. This material does not take into account your particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs, and is not intended as a recommendation that is appropriate for you. You must make an independent decision regarding investments or strategies mentioned on this program. Before acting on information on the program, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial or investment advisor.